you join me to pledge allegiance to our flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Now we'll start with awards and presentations.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Our first recognition is for a 15-year service award to Magdalena Fernandez. She is an engineer, too, and our Magdalena has been instrumental in the work that's going on out there at Neo City. She's been the distribution lead out there. So thank you, Maggie.
Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Jose. Okay, thank you. Late last year, Jose went was sent off to work on a disconnect service order on Pompano Drive. When he arrived at the location, he made contact with the customer and realized that he was legally blind. So they called into the office and made contact with Lillian, a customer service rep. They facilitated the payment process, and the customer was extremely grateful. The small act made a big impact on the customer, and the customer called in to compliment Jose. So they should be recognized for his extra measure of kindness and consideration and handling of the customer's dilemma. Thank you, Jose, for all you do. And congratulations. I'd like to introduce you to our board. Okay. Beginning with our chairman, Director Jenny Van Meter.
Yes. Thank you so much for everything you do, and this is for you.
Vice Chair, Director Kathleen Backer.
Congratulations, and thanks for all the good work. That's a really nice story.
Director Hemphill.
And a special parking place.
Amen.
Mayor Alvarez.
Congratulations. Yes. Thank you for your service. Here's a little, so you can go watch a good show in Osceola Arts.
Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it.
When they off the pay, enjoy it.
Like that. Appreciate it.
And Director Rocha.
Oh, he's got a shirt. For this KUA shirt.
Only
thank you.
They love you, Jose. And we're going to hear the audience. Is there anyone in the audience would like to speak to the board today? If now, this would be the time. If not, we'll go to the consent agenda.
Make a motion to accept.
We have a motion to accept. We have a second.
Second.
We have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
No, you like sign? Motion's approved. There's none. We go to informational presentations. City of Kissimmee Parks and Recreation's presentation.
Yes, I'm pleased to, and actually the board each month that we have, we kind of cycle through these sponsorships, and you see the request for funds, but oftentimes didn't see the other end of it and how things worked out. So we bring these folks back to kind of give a recap. So we have Liz Harris here, who's the Director of Parks and Recreation for the City of Kissimmee. Come on up.
Good afternoon, board. I have been part of many communities in Florida and in Oregon and worked with a lot of utility companies. Nothing beats KUA in the city of Kissimmee.
Absolutely.
Y'all have it hands down, and it's because of your commitment, your staff, and you do a phenomenal job. Working with KUA has been such an impact on the city's parks and recreation and the city in general. The sponsorship of about $25,000 goes to not only events, but KUA has been so supportive. And if we need anything like a giant horseshoe hung 45 feet, we can call Chris Gent for New Year's Eve. We work together really well to ensure that this community, your customers, my customers, and I'm a customer too, have wonderful things to do in our parks and recreation system. So I just did a little video, a recap, 3 minutes, that show you all the labor of your hard work and your funding and how much we appreciate it.
The stage is set for our biggest chili cook-off and craft beer festival yet. There will be more chili and more craft beer than ever before on Saturday, February 23rd from 12 to 5 p.m. at Kissimmee Lakefront Park. We've got live music from Juno Smile and Diamond Dixie, as well as craft vendors and the KUA Kids Zone, so the whole family can have a good time. Don't miss the 23rd Kissimmee Sunshine Regional Chili Cook-Off and Craft Beer Festival. Go to kissimmee.org/chili for more info. The city of Kissimmee is celebrating its 136th birthday at our annual Cowtown Festival, and you're invited. Feast on some of Central Florida's best barbecue and enjoy live music from Thomas Wynn and the Believers and Unity. Bring your family and stop by the KUA Kids Zone and enjoy games and activities for all ages. We hope to see you on Saturday, March 30th from noon to 5 p.m. at Kissimmee Lakefront Park. For more info, go to kissimmee.org/cowtown. Just set for our.
We value this relationship and this partnership so much. Not only does it impact what we're trying to do in the city of Kissimmee, but also in this community, because a lot of our community participates and attends these events, and there are locals. And when we have 5,000 people there for a movie in the park or for one of our signature events like 4th of July, 20,000 people, that makes a huge impact. And it is a good investment for your advertising and sponsorship dollars. We feel like we get the biggest bang for the buck. And I love Team KUA. And if any of them are looking for a job and want to be parks and recreation professionals, I have very high expectations, and I hire professionals.
Cut the mic,
but I would
please.
Hire anyone.
I'll use the hammer here. Thank you.
The state.
Okay, Council on Aging.
Yes, we have a whole team from Council on Aging, but Bev Hoagland, are you the one speaking? Okay, so come on up. Bev is the CEO of the Osceola Council
cookies?
On Aging.
We have cookies. We like to take cookies wherever we go. I'm glad to be here, and thank you all very much. My name is Bev Hoagland, and for two more weeks, I'm the CEO of the Osceola Council on Aging, and I'm retiring in 2 weeks. And I really wanted to come today to be able to tell you from my heart how special this organization is. I am so proud of all of you. I know Jose had great employee of the month, but they're all the employees here are just like that. They are wonderful, and I mean that from my heart. And so it was important that I came and I said, I want to start out because I want to say something that's personal for me to you and staff. And here's my team, Wilda Bilal and Kathy Arft. And Kathy's the food lady, so she's got the cookies. And Wilda's did her usual video.
Is it a video? Do you have it?
Uh-huh. Okay, so I'll turn it over to...
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for your help.
Did I say something? Say that on one day a week I work for you guys as one of the drivers, and I see firsthand the impact you have with the senior citizens. So it's an honor when we support the organization. It really makes me proud to be part of that.
Thank you very much.
Well, an Osceola Council on Aging came today to thank us, but we wanted to take this opportunity to recognize and and thank Bev Hoagland as CEO of Osceola Council on Aging, the county's largest social service agency. Bev has served this community for more than 40 years, aiding the most vulnerable of our community. The council is known for its senior citizen-focused programs like Meals on Wheels and adult daycare. But the nonprofit offers help to people of all generations through things like utility assistance and a medical clinic for the uninsured low-income residents. Bev successfully leads a team of 220 workers and more than 2,000 volunteers. And this community would truly not be the same without her four decades of leadership. Today is Bev's final community presentation as CEO before she moves off into a well-deserved retirement. So on behalf of KUA and its board of directors, we'd like to thank you for your 40 years of service. Congratulations.
You know, we're just going to miss you. Anyway.
I'll be volunteering.
Okay. Number three, we have a customer satisfaction survey.
Do we want to give people a chance to leave?
Is there anybody that would like to leave before we go on with the program? We'll take a little bit of a break.
Okay.
Hopefully these are fat free.
Oh, they make good cookies.
Michael Vigenti is the CEO of Great Blue Research, and they have we have contracted with them the last few years to actually conduct our annual customer satisfaction survey of both residential and commercial customers. And they also do work. They've done work for FMPA, and they've also done work with APPA. So they not only have a perspective in comparing us, how we're doing in our own community, but how we compare to other municipal utilities around the country. So with that, Michael.
And good afternoon to everyone. Thank you so much for having us, and thank you for your business. We really appreciate it. Although we are a Connecticut firm, we have national roots, and I have Connecticut roots. I have family that I'm going to see later today, this afternoon, which is great. And I was a little bummed out to see that the Chili and Craft Beer Fest had already passed, because I figured that might be a good way to spend the afternoon. But congrats to Jose and Magdalena who left. But I will say quickly, I have worked with hundreds of utilities since I started in this industry in 1998, and I can usually tell when I walk in the door what kind of organization I'm going to be working with. And what you saw today, and the gentleman in the back doing the wave for Jose, that's an indication of the culture that's been built here, the presentation that Bev gave, and the community partnership that you all have created. That shows and comes through loud and clear, and you should be very proud of that, because that has a direct correlation to how your customers view you, how they feel about being a customer of yours, and that gives you lots of goodwill credits in the bank. So I will simply say congrats on that, and well earned. I'm going to take you through these first couple of slides really quickly for kind of the nuts and bolts of the presentation. As Chris mentioned, we did two surveys for you. We did 403 completed residential surveys among your residential customers. We made those calls April 1st through April 4th. We also completed 101 surveys among your commercial customers April 1st and April 2nd. We had a really good mix of demographics in both of those segments. For the residential folks, we had a good mix of age and owners versus renters, males, females, length of time in terms of residency, so we want to get a good mix of your customer base. On the commercial side, we also captured a good number of folks, both with a variety of employee sizes as well as length of time of customers. So we don't want to just get all your new folks or all your repeat folks, but the types of questions that we asked are really rating KUA's organizational characteristics, satisfaction with customer service and field personnel. I think you have an idea, if you haven't read the report already, based on what you saw today, the types of results that I'm going to present today, which are a little bit more fun for me when I have good news to share. Perceptions of KUA's corporate leadership, understanding and perceptions of hold times and contact resolution, that's going to be an important one that we'll talk about. Usage and satisfaction with phone apps, mobile billing, and online chat functions. And then the importance and willingness to donate to the Good Neighbor Fund. These are all things, again, when we capture demographics, we want to understand how folks think about you, how they interact with you, what their thoughts are. And again, I kind of gave you a quick overview on these. These these pie charts will just show you the mix. You can dive into them later. I know you're eager to get to all the budget talk, so I will keep this short and sweet. Jumping in really to the key study findings, I think most importantly, there's, as Chris mentioned in the introduction, this is our third year working with you. So we adopted some of the previous metrics and how you calculated those metrics historically. And then we also have some other ways to look at it. Generally speaking, when we're looking at these types of ratings and understanding how folks think about the utility they work with, any sort of service organization, we're looking for, if you're using a 10-point scale, we're looking for high eights, low nines, mid nines. When you're talking about the 100-point scale, we're looking for high 80s, mid to high 80s, and low 90s. And what you're going to see is lots of that. When I talk about any sorts of dips, they're really fractional. They're really marginal. And in reality, most of them are just what we refer to as normal movement from one cycle to the other. And looking at this first slide, I think what's really important is providing a bill that's easy to understand is really important. That was an average of 9.15. When we look down on a little later, those two red boxes, and again, we're talking 0.1% decrease. So nothing, again, well within the margin for error, but following through on promises made, as well as concern for customers' needs. Now, this doesn't mean the opposite of what you see here is negative. In many cases, it turns out to be, I don't know enough to provide a rating, or I'm not sure what my expectations are. So some of what I'm going to really share with you today is continuing to ask your customers what their expectations are, how they frame their expectations, their needs for you. All of these are ever-changing in today's municipal utility market. They're changing in all service organizations, but particularly as you're getting younger bill payers into your customer base, they have different expectations. Here's those same 10 characteristics on the commercial side. So that first group that I showed you was on the residential side. So again, lots of high eights, low and mid nines. So really good news here. Again, the fluctuations that occur, following through on promises made, sometimes folks don't understand how that promise falls through. So I want to focus more on education. There's no real broken things here. We're not seeing things that are broken that need repair. We're seeing increased and constant conversation. As I was listening to some folks chatting while we were waiting for the meeting to kick off, folks were saying, just in the meeting I was sitting at today, I received 60 emails. So think about all of your customers and the competition that they're getting for their information, whether it's stuff for their children, whether it's stuff from their job, whether it's things from their volunteer groups. There's lots of communication information that is being pointed at us on a daily basis. So you're competing with that. That competition is made even harder when you're reliable, you serve them well, you treat them well, it makes you actually further down on the priority scale of who they're going to pay attention to. So competing with that communication, that information is important. And Chris, you and your team have done an amazing job on that. But you see this across the spectrum. It's everything from how you treat your employees, how you treat your customers, what kinds of information you're giving to them, helping them stay safe, protecting the environment, these sorts of things. So these 10 characteristics, again, measured for both residential and customer, high marks across the board. As you may also be aware, the Public Power Data Source is a tool that, based on the market, APPA and Great Blue jointly created. We had been hearing from our customers for many, many years that we liked the idea or the concept of a J.D. Powers-like tool where we could see how we compared against others in our state, our region, nationally, those sorts of things. But most folks didn't like the price tag associated with such models. So APPA and Great Blue got together and we said, we can do this. We can provide something that we think is really important and really solid for the municipal market and do it at a fraction of the cost. So on that note, you all have joined us in the PPDS, and so we wanted to also provide you with these ratings. So from a comparability and some contextual standpoint, in our national survey, we capture 12,000 digital surveys per year, 3,000 per quarter. We capture them in all 50 states. We make sure that our subscribers, we're capturing surveys from their service territory, and then we're comparing them against statewide, national, and there's a lot. This is a tool that you all have the ability to log into. There's no limit on the number of logins, so you can go into this tool at any time and take a look. If you just ask Chris or any of the folks here, they can get you into there. But as you look at these eight characteristics, communicating with customers, helping customers use less electricity, responding promptly to customer service questions and complaints, being open and honest, maintaining modern and reliable infrastructure, good service and value for the cost, community involvement, overall satisfaction with KUA. Your average positive rating of those eight characteristics is 88.5% compared to 65.6% that we see in the PPDS ratings for the state of Florida and 66.9 nationally. So, again, your customers have very high views of you, and you're serving them. They have high expectations, but you're also delivering on those expectations. A couple more slides for you. As you'll see here, residents are largely satisfied with office personnel. You see that average positive rating in yellow for 2019 is at 91.3%, all within the margin for error of what we saw previously in 2017 and 2018, so well within just a couple of percentage points. In 2017, those blue bars, the cumulative total was 93.2%. In 2018, that cumulative total was 91.6%. So again, 91.3, very strong. These are the guys and gals, and you saw many of them here today, that are delivering service at a high level and really truly genuinely caring about your customers. That's shining through. What I always say is it's my job, because I know you all have high expectations of yourself, is to let you know those areas we want to pay close attention to. As you look at these yellow bars, we started to see some folks move from the very satisfied to the somewhat satisfied category. Now, with more of the DIY and do-it-yourself type tools that are out there, which is what folks are looking for and they want, there is some evolution and shifting that's going on. So we want to continue to ask our customers, how are we doing? How can we better deliver our service to you? That shift is nothing that we really truly want to be alarmed about, but it is something we want to pay note to, because there's something that was going on. I suspect it is, again, more of that digital usage and going to some do-it-yourself technologies, but we want to make sure that we still have that customer impact. On the side of the commercial folks, again, office personnel, 83%. I'm sorry, 88.7%. So again, mid to high 80s, low 90s is the goal here. This is exactly where you're at. So nothing but good news on this slide. Lower rate of first contact resolution. So again, very similar. There is a very strong correlation to those folks that have or perceive what they believe to be a first contact resolution. So it doesn't mean, for example, I call up and I need a meter repaired or replaced, and by the end of that phone call, I have a new meter, right? That wouldn't be realistic. But it's my understanding or my perception that I make that call, I indicate to the office personnel or customer service personnel what I have going on, and by the end of that phone call, there is a plan in place. We will be out to your house on such and such a day. Here's what the process will look like. We will be there for X amount of time, and that's how it goes. I don't have to follow up. So this isn't just about phone calls. And speaking with some folks in that department and understanding that they're 6.5%, a little bit of a dip in that category, but again, wanted to get some context as to where that might have come from. And there is that bigger push to push folks to some of the online and do-it-yourself technologies. The good news here is that allows for you to spend more time on the phone with your customers if they have those more complex needs. So again, making sure that we're taking care of and setting those expectations very clearly and letting folks know what the process is going to look like, that contact or that resolution to that issue may take 3 or 4 steps, but we're going to inform them of those steps and set reasonable expectations. Because at the end of the day, those folks who believe that you take care of them the first time around overall provide you with a 95% positive rating for their overall satisfaction. So this is probably the most important metric that we track across the country with all of our clients, and you're doing very, very well. To give you some perspective, typically on that first time contact resolution, generally speaking, I'm telling folks if they have high 60s or low 70s in this category, I'm typically telling them that that's a pretty good job. You're at 80% in this category. So you are far ahead of most of the utilities we're presenting to, and we work with hundreds across the country every year. So really good job there, but that's an important piece of information. We did see a little bit of dip. When you look at the margin for error on the commercial satisfaction side, with 101 surveys, the margin for error is about 9%. So you're well within that margin for error, so there is some fluctuation there. But similar to what we saw in the office service personnel, a little bit of movement within that cumulative total, so we just want to pay attention to that. But again, 89% for overall satisfaction of the field service rep that solved my resolution is really, really solid. We put up there in the top right corner the typical reasons that they're being contacted for, and we can dive into this data a little deeper if you want to understand where some of those ratings are coming from. Again, there's no additional charge for any of the follow-up work that we do for you, so call us anytime. 100% satisfaction with field service reps for your commercial customers, so really no room for improvement there. I mean, if you want to get nitpicky, you can try to take that 11.1 and the somewhat satisfied, move them into the very, but all kidding aside, 100% satisfaction with your field service reps. Few using mobile bill pay, but for those who are, they're satisfied. Again, you're going to see smaller numbers in the utilization of more of your technologies early on as you're adopting them, rolling them out, those sorts of things. I remember the days when I saw 7% internet usage, and clearly that has changed over the last 20 years. This is very similar to that. As folks adopt more of the mobile technologies and digital technologies, it will just become the commonplace. There's still a number of folks that are utilizing and preferring some of the more traditional models and methods. But at the end of the day, when you look at any of the ratings on the online, bill pay, text alerts, those sorts of things, all of your ratings are in the nines, 9.5. So really, really good numbers there. Last slide here. Again, just a real quick reminder, there's a more detailed version of the report that's available for time constraints. We wanted to minimize it, but I think really the big key takeaways is education, really. So with those online services that are available, so many of the do-it-yourself technologies that are available to your customers are actually what is becoming an increased expectation of customers anyway. They want to do more online so they can do it while they're at a, you know, waiting to pick up the kids from school or whatever the case may be. There's lots of more agile ways in which they can have that relationship with you. But again, thinking about and keeping in mind the competition for information that you compete against every day, it's just constant evolution, education on the services that you're offering and how they can help customers. But don't forget, we still have our great representatives and employees here to service you if you need to talk to us face-to-face. I think I already really addressed that first contact resolution. This should be a mantra within the organization of how can we set that expectation. And again, it has to be resolved on that very first phone call, but setting that expectation that they're not going to need to follow up with us, that we're going to follow up with them and handle the need that they have. And again, your customer base is changing. I always pick on the millennials because they're just the one group that does everything, that receives information and uses information differently than their predecessors and the different groups ahead of them. So when you think about that group, we just have to learn how they think differently. And this applies to many different groups. It applies to new residents coming into your service territory. It's new customers, whether it's business or residential. Again, we want to continue to ask what their needs are. I know there's some talk and some consideration as you go through your strategic plan about a customer or an employee survey. This is a great way to capture that, and it's a pretty low cost to do so. But we want to continue in all the conversations that we have with our customers, both residential and commercial, to just continue to ask them, what are your expectations of us? Please define that for me. And you can have those in informal conversations daily with your customers. Keep asking them, and I'm convinced and very confident that you'll continue to deliver on them. So that said, I have no cookies to share, no beer, and no chili, but I will do better next time, I promise. So again, thank you very much. I'm available to answer any questions either now. Our contact information is on the sheet as well. Again, don't hesitate to call us if you have any questions or needs from the survey, and thank you once again for your service and your business.
Any questions for Michael?
No. Great.
Very good report. Very comprehensive.
Thank you very much, folks. Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay, we have old business.
Yes, ma'am.
We've got a few months ago, we came before you and talked about the possibility of purchasing some land that the county was on the market to get rid of. And we went out and looked at whether or not we had any need for that land. And Larry's going to provide you an update on that. So.
Thank you, Brian. Good evening, everyone. Last November, staff reported that there was the acreage that's now the baseball complex that the county is going to sell. So we brought to you, said, well, this might be a good use for us for a laydown area, or in the meanwhile, maybe use to the public. We figured between $7 and $10 million of expenditure on it would be, fall in the right range, and we could afford that. It wasn't, you know, the best that, unless we got good return. Well, we on our study, we saw that for the cash, we don't get immediate return on it. Then also, I could probably walk you out here and look out the window, and we still have plenty of laydown area to expand into. So this time, we feel that it's not the best use of the public's money because we don't need the expansion. If we do have property up against this, the Kelly property that we've checked in on pricing on that, and it's pretty much in the range what we were considering in the other. And last but not least, the ballpark's sold anyways, if you saw the paper. So the county's already sold that. But at this time, we don't need expansion, and if we did, we do have some adjacent property we could consider. Is there any questions on that?
Any questions? Thank you, Larry.
Thanks, John.
So we won't be able to pay. Were we going to?
And then, Madam Chair, this next item, last month, Director Hemphill asked staff to go back and look at drafting some language to govern live streaming of our meetings, and staff has done that, and to present that as a grant with the General Counsel.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, Madam Chair, board members. It's a pleasure to be here for you tonight. Yes, last month the board asked me to ask staff to look at bringing in a written change to our bylaws to permit live streaming. We have been live streaming pursuant to informal policy, really, at least since 2008. But this would make it formal. And what the bylaws changes do, could you all take me to the actual resolution? It's a couple more pages. Keep going. Yep, keep going. There you go. Very good. That this would be an amendment to our bylaws. They haven't been amended very often. But we would add if the board agreed, the board would be adding a Section 9. Can we keep going? Let me show them that section. Perfect, right there. Thank you. A Section 10 to our existing bylaws. And what that section provides for is at the board's discretion, this is very important, at your discretion, you may direct that staff have a regular or special meeting of the board live streamed, which would be consistent with what our practice has been up to now. Workshops are not included. They are not included, and by comparison, I understand the city does not live stream its workshops. There's an understanding that since there's no action to be taken, that you can treat them differently. How I would anticipate perhaps it working out, let's say sometime later this year or next year, you decide you want to hold a special meeting to do a performance evaluation of CEO. You could hold a workshop first and have a robust discussion about the performance. And after you have that robust discussion, the chair could adjourn that meeting and then call into the special meeting, which portion would be live streamed. And at the special meeting, you would rate the CEO's performance and decide on a raise or not. Action would be taken. It's very clear in our bylaws and under state law in general that workshops are not designed for action. They're designed for discussion. So that's how it would work, and I stand for any questions.
Are there questions? Yes.
Yeah, I got one. You said that the board may... We will make the decision whether or not. Is that a monthly decision we have to make, or are we going to just continue live streaming every month, or are we going to be making that decision prior to the meeting? Because
no.
It has the word May.
Well, it's designed because legally the board is not required to live stream any meetings. The board's been doing it pursuant to basically an informal policy for the past 11 plus years. So we don't want the board to limit its flexibility. So, you know, right now we're not live streaming this meeting right now because of technical issues. But once those technical issues are resolved, the expectation would be that live streaming would continue for regular and special meetings. But the board has a discretion. I would recommend that at a meeting to say, yeah, we if they didn't want a meeting live streamed, the board could say we don't wish to have this meeting live streamed. I think that for public policy reasons, especially given our past practice of the 11 plus years, it makes sense to continue live streaming except for workshops.
Yes, Kathy.
Well, we hadn't live streamed that long because I can remember when we decided to do it and added the equipment and all that kind of stuff. So, and we did that almost on a trial basis for the first year to see if anybody watched it. And I think basically people don't watch it. Do we cover ourselves in here that we will record the meeting? And can the recording be our actual record of the meeting and then live streaming just an added feature if we want to do it?
Well, we do record the meetings. That's my understanding.
And that's the legal.
Well, the audio is absolutely legal. And actually, recording the meetings is important for other reasons as well.
Right. But that's our legal record of the meeting, correct? The audio recording. This is just something we kind of decided to do. And I don't know if we want to lock ourselves into continuing to do it or just do it informally like we have done, or is it cost effective? You know.
That's why the language is discretionary. That's why it's May. The board doesn't have to do anything it doesn't want to do. There's no law that requires the board to live stream its meetings.
Mayor, I think you wanted to say
something. Yeah, and I'll just give an example. With the city of Kissimmee, the only thing that we live stream is our commission meeting.
Right.
When we have workshops, when we do evaluations of our city manager and our city attorney, we don't live stream. When we have interviews, we don't live stream. We take minutes. So we have the clerk of the city taking minutes, and by law, that's really just was needed just in case someone calls for public records. And the only thing that we only live stream is the commission meetings. And I think that KUA board should be run the same way, where they live stream their meetings and everything else. It just take minutes of what happened in that meeting.
Yeah,
I don't
and a special
believe,
meeting to me.
Yeah, I don't believe that evaluating our president or interviews that we have should be live streamed.
I totally agree, and I'm trying to say, are we giving it more importance by changing this and including it, or should we just keep doing it the way we've been doing it?
Well, what you've been doing is you've been recording everything. You've been live streaming everything. This board can actually just say the only thing that we're going to live stream is our regular board meeting and stick to that.
And it says special if we want to, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any?
Can we go back to the recitals, the opening, the whereas, please?
That's up another page or two.
My question is that we need to have a fixed policy. We can't just every meeting decide you're going to do it or not.
Right there.
Yeah, if I may, Madam Chair, I caution this board to choose certain type of meetings or recording them or not, because then under the sunshine, you know, people will come up and say, so why aren't you not recording this? So if this board sets policy to move forward and says the only thing that this board from now on will do is live stream the board meeting, and that's it. You made a stand. If you choose some meetings or other, it's going to give people some thoughts that what are you hiding? Why aren't you recording this one too? Why are you making a decision? So if this board makes that decision, that's what your legal counsel will move forward with.
And Madam Chair, to elaborate on what the mayor just said, that is why workshops are not included in here, to avoid that issue of picking and choosing meetings and raising that issue with the public.
I think it should go beyond just workshop. I think the language should be there where, just my opinion, I'm not an attorney, but I have a lot of attorneys around me all the time. It should be where the language comes out and says, this board will live stream the board meetings, period. You don't have to mention anything else. Why confuse the public? Why give them any type of reasoning of why this one and not that one? This board can make that decision, and language could be just that.
I think that what down below is written, that's exactly what it says.
That's what it's designed to do.
And what it does, it gives us the leeway in certain circumstances that to make the decisions not to live stream.
Can I see your new language
if
again?
If something.
The language
can we go back to section 10, please?
Another thing, we've got to leave ourselves a loophole in case it's broken. Right now, today, we're not live streaming. Right. We're not trying to hide anything, but we've got to have somehow that we can make that decision, or we'd come to a meeting and it's broken and we have to go home.
Well, what Grant, what he was saying is there's really no law that says that we have to live stream. And so if it's broken, it's broken. If we have a customer that calls out, why isn't this being recorded? I mean, it could be as simple as when we were working on our system in the city and we were a few months without the system, we put it in our website. You know, right now the board meetings, the commission meetings will not be recorded because we're working on the system, and it really puts you on a clear path.
My feeling is that this is a very good addition to it. I want to question, do we take minutes of all our meetings?
Yes.
And our workshops.
We do have a written, where anybody wants to get that, they yes. can come in and ask for it.
And we have audio.
We have an exact transcript, yes, exactly. Including workshops.
So in other words, this is just over and above what we normally would do anyway.
Yes.
The minutes are there for anybody to look at verbatim. So I think this just gives us some flexibility as far as I'm concerned.
Out of curiosity, IT, how many folks view these on a monthly basis? What kind of viewing we get? How many folks are out there looking at this handsome group up here?
The viewership is minor.
We have numbers.
We can get numbers for you. I can bring you back some of the statistics. They're not very impressive. Most of the time, it's just in the beginning of the meetings when we have employees who are being recognized. You'll see sort of a swell of numbers from coworkers and family who want to see that, which is understandable. And then right around the time that ends, we see the viewership drop off to almost zero. Sometimes it can peak up during interviews. It can go up higher, but that was our record.
Joe, wasn't it?
and that's like what I said. I think this is, we're spending an awful lot of time on something that could just be very easily done and go on with.
If I can just say the last, because it's really killing me, this language. My opinion, regular and special meetings of the board may be live streamed. So what constitutes may be? I don't feel like doing a live stream now. And so it's too open for interpretation. When you put that may be, it's a decision, and that's when the people are going to question. So why did the board decide that on this one, I'm not recording, and on the other one, I'm not? And that is when you bring the questions on those out there that want to raise some kind of question when there's nothing really to hide because we're taking minutes. But that's the only problem I have when I read that language.
Mayor, so I hear what you're saying. I think it's designed to give the board discretion, but also to Director Thacker's point, if the technology is broken and we can't live stream, we're not on the hook for something that we can't do anyways because of technological issues.
Well, on the last sentence, it clearly says that in no event shall the authority be required. So it's optional.
Yes, it's completely optional. It's designed that way so your discretion's not fettered. It's not shackled. I appreciate what the mayor said. I would not recommend that, and I don't think this board would do it, going meeting to meeting. Well, let's live stream this one and not that one. I think
it's a policy. We could put this in, and the policy is we live stream it, except for the special meetings and interviews and things like that.
Workshops.
And the workshops, and that's to be assumed. So.
And if it's broken,
and
we
that's
can...
policy that we will tell you about.
It's
not written down. This is what we want to do.
And if it's broken, it gives us the latitude to say.
Sure.
Right. Well, since I'm the one that started this, I definitely think that the regular board meeting should be live streamed.
Sure.
When possible.
As long as there are no technological issues that prevent it. But when it comes to some of the special meetings and the workshops, I don't really see a need for that to occur because we don't even have, even on the regular board meetings, we don't have good audience.
That's right. Well, I think that's what we all, so I think we just need to hear, there's no voting, just how to.
Oh, this would require a vote. If you adopted this, it's changing our bylaws.
This is adding something to the.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. To the point about special meetings, the only issue there is that we do have special meetings or meetings that are described as special meetings for budget and for strategic planning. And I don't know, there may be an expectation now that we've been live streaming that the public would expect to see those live streamed. I don't know. There's not a huge demand out there, but that, whereas with workshops, it's just kind of clean. Workshops are not going to be live streamed. And they're not covered by this amendment. That's by design.
Okay. So do I have a motion to accept this?
I would still like the language to say that the regular board meetings will be live streaming with the exception of any technological issues for the regular meetings. Anything else, it will be up to a decision beforehand.
Okay, so can we...
How does the board? We need some input from the board here. What do you feel?
No, I'm not sure. We're making a little hill mountain out of
it. Well, that's my feeling.
We've
got a budget to go.
Either we do live stream or we don't. If it's not required,
what
and we and we have the are we trying to save money by not doing it, or are we trying to? You know, what's the purpose of doing it or not doing it? We got to answer those questions, and if we don't, I just continue as it goes, and put in that just the regular meetings and the special meetings will be recorded, and then the everything else will not. And just one line there without having to
make it simple.
Okay,
the kiss rule.
Understood. So let me, Madam Chair, if hearing what the board is saying, let staff go back. What I'm hearing is regular meetings. Let us go back and play with the language a little bit more and bring it back to the board at our next board meeting.
I think they went regular special meetings, and this is where action is going to be taking place, shall be live streamed. Workshops will not be.
That's what I'll interviews.
Shall be live streamed, provided that you have the technical.
Maybe
right.
At the end, it says no event shall the authority be required to require stream any of this meeting. And just add the fact that, I guess, willing, we will continue to do the regular board meeting.
You know, that language of shall be regular meeting, to me, is more straight than may be live. It's just putting this board in a liability of something that there's really nothing to hide, but it gives people the opportunity to second guess what is really happening. So when you say this board shall record the board meetings, you're making a straight decision, you're not confusing anyone, and you're making it simple. This is what we're going to record. a special meeting and a board meeting.
Okay, I think they've got the message of what to bring it back to us.
Just the last point is that if you use the word shall, you have to follow your own bylaws.
I know that's my problem is shall and may. Shall is a very strong word when you're in the bylaws.
It's an obligation.
It's an absolute legal obligation. So if you could cut it down to say will or.
I'm not sure, but what I'm not okay with it exactly as it is.
I am, but it's up to you guys. We're spending
so maybe
all
I'll
time
just
on it.
Let's follow the recommendation.
That we accept it and then see where we go.
Do we have a motion to accept it?
Yeah, that's what I tried to do.
Before you move forward, once you accept it, you add it into the bylaws. I think that the recommendation
we have a motion
on
the floor.
No, there was no motion yet.
Yes, Kathleen made a motion.
Just to kind of see where it went.
And Manny seconded it, right?
No, I was going to have a comment.
Okay. Who?
I seconded.
Ethel seconded. Now we can have comments.
So, again, you make a motion on section 10. You're adding it to the bylaws. I will suggest that you allow your legal counsel to come back with different verbiage, or even if you guys really want to work at it with your legal counsel, do a small workshop with him, work out the verbiage that you'll feel comfortable before you go ahead and approve it into your bylaws. Do not accept something in your bylaws that later on you're just going to change the language anyway. Just my opinion.
Yeah,
so we have a motion and a second that they are comfortable with the way it says. So
yeah. Now,
any other comments?
Yeah, my comment was just going to be that we follow the recommendation of the CEO and let him go back and come back to us with more languages. And we could even suggest language and write to them ourselves as board members. I know I would write this a certain way if I was writing it. And I could get some input into it for the and then bring it back at another meeting. Maybe it's no rush. We're still going to continue to do what we've been doing with live streaming.
Ray, do you have an opinion?
I would like to go back and see what different language can be applied.
Okay. So then we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
What's the motion, Madam Chair?
Accept it as it is.
Okay.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. No.
Motion
carries. Those have it. And so I think what the board wants is to bring it back with different language that clarifies what we want.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, quarterly financial report. Kevin?
Well, I hope this one is easier.
Easy, Madam Chair, Board. One thing we're sure of is that when budget is on the line, lots of viewership, and we're pretty sure about that. Our Nielsen ratings just go through the roof on that one. So, but I'd like to present to you our quarterly financial statements for the period ended March 31st, 2019, and this is to give you a brief summary of where we're at this point in the year, and then later on we're going to bring you the budget for your review and a couple of other items as well. So to give you a brief overview of where we are in terms of sales, our megawatt hour sales are above where we expected to be for budget and also compared to actual this year. We're about 5% over where we expected to be in terms of budget, and we're about 3.3% over where we were last year at this time. So increased sales for the year to date. We've also are happy to report that we were able to maintain excellent financial strength while meeting all the fiscal policies set by the KUA board. And so we have achieved a positive net income of $12.7 million and still met all of those obligations as well. Additionally, we were able to, on a life-to-date basis, report to you that we have achieved our competitive 1,000 kWh residential rate comparison in the bottom one-third. And we did that on the life-to-date basis. I think we shared with you at our last meeting that we did not accomplish that on a metric year basis, but on the measurement year, but we did on a life-to-date and on the fiscal year so far. In terms of where we are financially, our operating revenue is, as you would expect, a little bit ahead where we thought we would be because of the correlation to megawatt-hour sales increase. We expected to be at budget of $103.9 million year-to-date in budget, and we've actually exceeded that by about $5.7 million for a 5.5% increase over where we thought we'd be in terms of sales. I wanted to draw your attention to this item, too. On the topic of customer service tonight, Susan's group, on the collection of bad debt, we had budgeted that we would be down about, a reduction of about $172,000. That's actually a positive number, and what that reflects is positive collection efforts on the part of Susan's group and collections, and that's commendable and well done to turn that from a negative to a positive. So that means they're going back, not only maintaining customer service rating, but going back and collecting some of that old debt that we had written off to turn that negative into a positive. So that's a nice thing to be able to report. And that's a favorable variance, obviously, of the sum of those two numbers of the $213,000. Yes, ma'am.
Before you leave this page, on the metered sales revenue, how much of that is due to commercial versus residential sales?
Generally speaking, I don't know the specific breakdown on this particular quarter, but I believe it's about, and it's the 80-20 rule. I think on our commercial customers account for about 80%. That's how it generally works with us. About 80% on our commercial sales are for a metered sales revenue, and then the 20% is on the residential. And we can get exact numbers for you, but that's generally how our numbers work, and that they're fairly consistent over time. So moving into the cost of power adjustment line, we expected to be about $20,878. $878,000 for our year-to-date budget for cost of power, but actually we have been able to utilize additional $4.6 million because of reduced fuel expenses. We were able to pass that through to our customers through the true-up mechanism of COPA. So instead of the $20.8 million, we're at $25.5 million. Which is obviously the $4.6 million over where we expected to be. And that's because, and you'll see on the next slide, reduced fuel expenses for this year-to-date number. Rate stabilization transfer, we expected to utilize about $10.2 million in rate stabilization transfer. And our actual utilization is $1.8 million. Couple of things there attributed to that. We have not utilized the part of that is the fuel expense being a little bit lower. We haven't had to use as much to offset that. Additionally, we haven't had as much capital use for that at the beginning part of the year. But usually as we move into the summer, we'll see that utilization increase for rate stabilization. So we expect to be pretty close to where we budgeted that for the end of the year. But when we get into our high sales month in the summer, you'll see that trend reverse, and we start utilizing more rate stabilization fund for that fuel offset. Then total operating revenue, we expected to be about $101.9 million. We actually achieved 94.8, and again, that's because we did not require the utilization of rate stabilization to the extent that we thought possible. So we're about $7 million behind in total operating revenues. This is something we provide to you that you've asked for that gives you an idea of how much we're utilizing of rate stabilization to achieve the bottom one-third metric. Up to this point in the year, related to fuel cost bottom one-third, we've used about $500,000 of rate stabilization. And then again, so you see the draw to the general fund and capital projects is about $1.3 million. So for a total usage of rate stabilization of the $1.8 million. So only a very small part of that has gone to keep us in the bottom one-third year-to-date. Again, that may change as we get into the higher heat months, the higher megawatt-hour sales months as well. Fuel and purchase power, we had a less demand charge than what we'd anticipated. We were at 32, we expected to be at 32 million. We actually were at 28 million. The demand charge is the semi-fixed cost that we received through the ARP for largely the debt issuance. They were able to refinance some of the debt issuance related with some of the project, and that realized a savings for us. And you'll see that consecutively through the year. But up to this point, it's about a $4.2 million savings on demand charges. And additionally, in energy charges, commensurate with the sales megawatt hour increases, as you would expect, on the usage charge, which is the energy charge portion of our bill for the ARP, we have had an increase of about $1.6 million, and that's largely related to the increase in sales that we've seen, the variable portion of the bill. And then bulk rate, system rate stabilization, we use a budget for that, utilization of that, but that is the rate stabilization that we keep on over at FMPA, and it's used strictly for reducing the fuel expense bill that we get through them, and we've utilized about $608,000 of that for that purpose. And so that gives us total purchase power, fuel and purchase power, $54.9 million expected at budget, and we actually have kept that to $52.3 million for a positive variance of $2.5 million. And then you subtract that from the prior page, and you get a $46.9 million we're expected to be. We're actually at 42.5 revenues minus fuel and purchase power for a variance of $4.4 million. Moving into the departmental O&M, you'll see that we're fairly on track with most of these, with a few exceptions. In customer service, we have a variance of a positive variance of $485,000. That's largely related to right-sizing on the way up and having some unfilled positions. Also, with the decrease in bill and notice printing, as we have customers moving to the electronic format, we're not utilizing as much of those printing services, so that's saving us postage and related expenses in that category. Additionally, under the general manager's office, we have a variance of about $306,000, and that is related to transition costs from the departing general manager. And then if you move into the corporate communications area, a variance of $118,000. We'd budgeted to be at 627. We're at 745. Those fluctuate throughout the year depending on how those community support are utilized, and they generally will time out to be where we expect them to be at the end of the year for budget, but that's basically just a timing difference that will even itself out, as it's a first-come, first-served type payout. And then overhead credits, we have we expected to be at 2 million utilization of capital overhead credits, and basically what that is where we have folks who are working on O&M, but they are actually working on capital projects. We transfer that O&M cost to the capital project, and it effectively reduces the labor O&M cost in our O&M budget and puts it onto the capital projects. We're a little bit behind where we thought we'd be in terms of capital expenditures, so we're at a $654,000 variance there, and that will probably even itself out to by the end of the year. That gives us net operating revenue. We expect it to be at $28.6 million. We're actually at $24.3 for a variance of $4.2 million. And then finally, our other operating expenses are all on target, as you can see there, depreciation, taxes, intergovernmental transfers, and investments and return on investments. And so those, when you add everything together, we expected it to be about a $16.6 million net income or change in net position, and we're actually at 12.7 for a $3.9 million difference there. In the investment portfolio, you can see that we still have the largest part of our $111 million total portfolio invested at the Business Administration, SBA, and those are mostly short-term instruments. Most of these all are, and that's why we typically don't achieve quite the long-term gain on these that other entities do, because we do invest it for a short term. Our annualized rate of return on that is around 2.3%, we expect. And again, that's a little short of our metric of the SBA compared to, which would be about maybe 30 basis points higher. But that's because we do tend to invest for shorter maturities rather than longer maturities, because we tend to utilize that money for liquidity. And I'm happy to answer any questions on the quarterly financial reports.
If not, we'll go on.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Kevin.
It's getting scary. I'm starting to understand it.
Okay, this is your Human Resources Annual Report. And I would like to share some updates on some statistical HR-related topics, and we'll start with race and gender. As you can see here, we have 57.5% is white, 7.2% is black, 29.5% of our workforce is Hispanic, and 0.7% is Asian, with 5.1% in two or more race categories. And our workforce comprises 67% males and 33% females. You can see here that most of our employees for our workforce range between 35 and 54, but this is a new phenomenon starting to emerge because most of the baby boomers now have transitioned out of the workforce, or they are very close to transitioning. The new phenomenon now are the circles at the bottom. We will have to be very careful and astute to pay attention, to be proactive in succession planning with this group. This will comprise over half of our workforce. You add 5 to 10 years to this age group in 31 percentile and 30 percentile, 61% of our workforce, you'll quickly get them accelerated near or into retirement eligibility. Because of this, it's going to be critical that HR team with the management to make sure that we're being proactive in succession planning and making sure that our, you know, we are continue to be able to meet our mission objectives and people don't leave us having the veterans walk out into retirement with the folks left behind not having the skill sets necessary to keep our mission going. Just an update on workplace injuries. These are recordable injuries, and that's not a typo that you're seeing 17-10. That's actually how it rolled out. I know you may be inclined to say, well, wait a minute, you got an error there, but it's not. That's exactly what happened. But in 2017, you can see that we are notably down in recordable accidents. I'm sorry, workplace injury. But now for auto accidents, you can note there that we are slightly up. But now I want to make sure that I'm clear here. That's not always necessarily a crash. We track everything. Any incident involving a vehicle or a rolling stock belonging to KUA is captured here. So it could have been something as simple as a tool fell on a hood, dented it, but it's not necessarily a crash. All right? We received 2,142 applications into our online systems. That's good because it tells us that people really want to work here, and some of our departments can really get busy. It's not uncommon for us to get over 1,000 applications. Susan now can attest to that most recently, 1,000 applications for one job vacancy. So it's good to be an employer of choice in your area. And management successfully made 33 placements with the application systems for 2018. A couple of firsts that we had that I want to share with you was Veterans Day. This year, was the first time that I know of that KUA really made an effort to acknowledge the veterans and the people who have served our country. And it turned out to be kind of a week-long deal. But employees who were veterans were encouraged to share veteran stories, service stories. They were also encouraged to bring photos, and they did, and they posted them on their doors. Chris did a write-up and put out to them all as well. And they were also encouraged to post them in their work on their workstations. And it turned out to be a really great program. Also, we invited a guest speaker, a distinguished gentleman, by the name of Sergeant First Class Melvin Morris. He was a Medal of Honor recipient for the Vietnam War veteran era. This is the very highest military recognition medal any military recipient can get. That award is awarded by the President of the United States, and his was awarded by President Obama. And he had just returned from meeting with President Trump when he came to our luncheon. So we were really pleased at having him, and we got a lot of positive comments from both military members and non-military members about our honor for our veterans. Another first, we took time this year to make special recognition to the women in our workforce. We correlated that with the International Women's Day, celebrating social, economic, and cultural and political achievement of women worldwide. Now, ours had a somewhat of a different twist on it. We put more emphasis on career and career development. And what we did was we also had a panel of very expert women in our current KUA workforce, senior management members, and they participated in a panel that helped give information about their career experience and also how to encourage and motivate them to aspire to greater levels of responsibility here at KUA. as it turns out. And they also did a fashion show and a talent model performance segment as well. So overall, we got a lot of positive comments about our offering to the, of that program. And lastly, I just wanted to let you know that we have a third certified public managers class going now. That's a 2-year program. The focus is on certified public managers leadership development program. It's a program that targets all leaders and managers in government specifically. It is a nationwide program. And again, the program is 2 years. This is the third class. It moves managers away from traditional management models into engagement, embracing diversity, and having the people that they lead think outside of the box and really be creative thinkers, and to inspire them to go beyond the call of duty in terms of doing their job and be creative. We are pleased that should they, and I'm confident that they will complete this course, but if they complete it, it will comprise 75 people that have successfully gone through the program here, and that is really a good thing that we are constantly trying to develop our leadership and our the technical experts here at KUA. This program was inspired and motivated by our past chairperson, Reginald Hardy, in terms of him getting us involved with it, but it has been so beneficial to so many professionals until we've kept it going. That concludes my presentation. I'll be glad to answer any questions if you have any at this time. Yes, ma'am.
Any other activities or that you're going to be doing maybe in the future?
Well, maybe so.
Yes, so we're looking as part of our a strategic plan. We're looking at some developmental opportunities for executive staff. We're also talking about succession planning, and not just succession planning at the executive level, succession planning throughout the organization. And a part of that will be a development piece to make sure that people have the tools to be ready to move into roles when opportunities present themselves.
And Brian and I have already discussed too. Programs to try to positively recruit women and minorities into our workforce. So,
okay. We'll go on.
Yes,
budget
ma'am.
Review.
Yes. The budget fun. So, the last 2 months we spent a lot of time talking about capital. Tonight, this evening, we'll be bringing the final piece of the FY 2020 budget recommendation. That's the O&M. For a total fiscal year 2020 recommendation of about $222 million. Budget highlights. It includes, we're forecasting zero staffing increases for FY 2020 in the subsequent 4 years. We're forecasting a 2% increase in customer growth equating to about a 1.1% increase in electric sales. As you can imagine, the biggest chunk of the budget is fuel and purchase power, totaling about $123 million. The budget does include a 3% market level adjustment that Wilbur would talk about. And then also, there's about $26.4 million worth of expenditures associated with capital projects. And with that, Kevin, lastly, there's one more thing I want to point out. The as you all know, we made some organizational changes that went into effect June 1. This budget document does not reflect the organization as it exists today. But the numbers and the people are all the same, okay? With that, Kevin, will you lead us off?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Brian. Madam Chair, if I may, I'll address that question that was raised in my previous presentation, if you'll allow me. Director Hempel asked, our count, the 80-13, was close, but that's the customer count, and residential is 87% of our customers, and commercial is 13%. And with respect to the revenues, the residential customers bring about 57% of that in, and versus commercial 43%. So just wanted to clarify that before we moved in ahead. Thank you,
So as we, as Brian has mentioned, we're bringing the budget to you this evening. And before we do that, we always remind ourselves as we go into this process and when we look at strategic planning, when we look at these numbers, and we realize that these aren't just dollars on a page. These aren't just, you know, these aren't just monies that we spend. These are our customers. These are our customers' dollars. And one of the things we look at with respect to that is our core purpose. And we let that drive our decision-making throughout the budgeting process. And so the things that we try to achieve, the goals, the projects that we embark on, take those things into consideration, and they're drivers of what we think and how we think when we achieve this budget. And as you know, our core purpose is to enrich the quality of life for our customers and community. I think you've seen evidence of that tonight, and we typically do in our board meetings, and we're grateful to be a part of that. And so as we look into our budget, you know, we look at things like our core purpose and our vision statement, and to be the right utility providing the right services at the right time. And additionally, our mission statement, which is to provide reliable and economical services to our customers while partnering with the community and the environment. And I think any objective observer would look at our budget and would look at a KUA meeting and know that we've done that, and we are proud to be a part of that. And so we thank you for that opportunity to bring you a budget for such a fine organization as this. So our budgeting process timeline, to give you a bit of look back and look ahead at where we're going to be, this, in April 3rd, you recall that we discussed our preliminary budget meeting. We talked about our capital requirements and looked at staffing levels, and as well as introducing any new programs that you as the board would direct us to do and that staff were bringing to you as recommendations. And then again on May 1st, we took a little more detailed look at our capital program and looked at a five-year funding plan, and we brought to you at that time what we anticipate was good news, which is the fact that moving forward, we can achieve the goals of the utility and do so in a way that is fiscally responsible and meets all the objectives of the board that you've set forth for us, and does it reflects a positive view on the utility and in the community in doing so. So today what we're going to talk about, since we've looked at capital and staffing, is we're going to look at our O&M expenses, and we're going to look at that in some detail by department, as you're used to at this point. And so each of the vice presidents will come up and share their particular department's O&M expenses. Again, and we'll get into that in a moment, the largest part of that being the labor cost, but we want to discuss that in detail tonight. Next month, our budget public hearing will take place, where you hopefully will adopt the recommended budget. And then we also have an alternate budget public hearing scheduled for August the 7th in the event that that additional date is required, so that we can then go effective with the new budget on October 1st, which is the beginning of our fiscal year. So as Brian mentioned, a couple of the highlights that we're particularly proud of as we look at the budget this evening is this document is based, again, on the current fiscal policies as set by the KOA board. When you see the final document in July, you'll recall that we made some modifications to some language last month on a couple of the fiscal policies. You'll adopt those as part of the budget moving forward so that they'll be incorporated into that as a matter of board policy, so that now we, moving forward, have those goals to move into. The majority of the O&M, as I've shared with you, and as Brian mentioned too, is fuel. That is the biggest piece, and that is a pass-through for us. And the majority of the remaining costs then are related to personnel, and so we'd like to spend that time with you in this meeting to discuss some of those things. Our O&M reflects no staffing increases projected over the five-year plan. Additionally, there are no base rate increases projected over the five-year plan. However, as you know, fuel and purchase power portion can fluctuate and does fluctuate with costs, and our rate stabilization will be required to achieve the bottom one-third goal, but that is no surprise to you, as you know that we do that throughout the year. Additionally, our commercial paper will be retired over 6 years. You'll recall that the budget we brought you last year anticipated for this year that we would try to pay that down in 2 years. The plan we brought you last month says we'll push that out for a six-year period of time. We'll pay some of that back this year and some of the remaining 5 years in 2020 through 2025. And my final slide will encapsulate all that together, but that was what we showed you last month, and that there's no change to that plan. Additionally, we don't forecast any other debt issuances being projected over the time horizon that we're going to share with you this evening. And finally, the department summaries do not reflect the recent reorganization. You recall we had a reorg 9-1 effective this fiscal year, past September, or excuse me, 10-1, and we are undergoing another reorg. And so some of the comparability may be lost between those departments, but if you'll suffer with us and be patient with us as we move through that, hopefully we can explain some of those and you can see that. But just for the record, we wanted you to be aware that some of that, the variances that you see aren't actual variances, but they're related to budgets being transferred between those reorg departments. So this is just a brief summary. We showed you this last time we met about how flow of funds work for KUA and, you know, where our money comes from and where it's spent and what we have left over to spend on those items. You know, we want to address that question. Can we afford what we're trying to do? And this is how we achieve that goal. We look at all the revenues coming in related to fuel, and those are all offset by the expenses. And so basically what we're left is revenues for non-fuel and expenses for non-fuel. That gives us our net cash available. And then that money is spent on capital projects and net of contributed capital or contributed capital, and then debt repayment and other sources and uses. That'll give us a surplus on a flow of funds cash basis. And then we either return that back to the rate stabilization if there's a surplus, or we will incorporate that back into revenues if there's a requirement to utilize that in revenues. And so that's basically how our money works in a pretty quick snapshot. So operating revenues and other sources, this gives you an idea of where from a pie chart perspective, where the biggest bulk, and as Director Hemphill was asking, you know, about metered sales, the biggest part of the $222 million, $186 million of metered sales, as you would expect. That is our primary business. We have other sources of funds as well, but those are minor in comparison to the $186 million for metered sales. And for 2020, we anticipate metered sales revenue. And you recall that when we start this process, we look at our demand forecast for the coming year. We work with FMPA on trying to get a good forecast for those and the growth. And so we anticipate the metered sales revenue of about $238 million for budget 2020. And additionally, a cost of power adjustment of about $52.2 million, and that'll be the true up through the COPA mechanism. We anticipate spending the $52 million through the true up mechanism for cost of power. The rate stabilization fund transfer, we anticipate utilizing about $20 million in this budget year. Next year, we anticipate being able to return about $6.6 million back to rate stabilization fund. And so I think I've shared with you historically that comes in and it goes out as it should, and that's its legal purpose. And so next year, because of the lengthening of the payout for the commercial paper, we'll be able to put some of that back into rate stabilization to use it at a later time. So total operating revenues, once you add all those together, we get to an FY20 budget number of $197 million for total operating revenue. And then the other operating or non-operating revenues and other sources, you'll recall I've shared with you previously that this particular presentation of the funds is from a flow of funds standpoint. So we have to show all the money being spent and all the money coming in as equal because it is a balanced budget. And so you'll note that the $222 million of total revenues and other sources will equate to what we anticipate to expend and otherwise return into rate stabilization or into the general fund as the needs arise. Other expenditures, now we'll move from the revenue side to the other expenditures and uses side. Again, the biggest piece of that, as you would expect, is fuel and purchase power. $123 million of the $222 million is for fuel and purchase power expenses, and that's a pass-through. Then additionally, our capital expenditures on a flow of funds basis, what we're expending because we're not borrowing any money, so all of that comes out of the reserves. So our capital flow of usage for flow of funds is $27 million. And then departmental O&Ms, which we're going to get into the detail of tonight, you've seen capital. Now we're going to do O&M. That $38 million is what we anticipate to spend through each individual department in O&M. So numerically, what you saw on the previous slide or the graph there is $117 million to the ARP purchase power. The non-ARP fuel expenses for non-ARP resources is a $5.4 million expenditure. For total fuel and purchase power of $123 million. Then I'll move past this because you'll get detail on this in a moment. Through the departmental O&M of $38 million, and you take all of that and combine that with the depreciation, amortization, the utilization of those funds for intergovernmental transfers, any bond payments that we will make, and that gives you, and you'll see here, we had budgeted 21.6, and the budget we showed you for 2019, we had anticipated that two-year payoff. That's why that 21.6 $6.6 million is there. We're going to pay $5 million of that in the budget, so that's the difference. And $5 million will go into, we pay back in 2020. And so we have a payment plan you'll see in the next slide or two how we're going to do that. So that's why it appears to be such a difference, is because we did. We changed course. We said, you know what, let's utilize that money in a different way. We'll pay back the CP in a longer period of time. It provides us more reserves, and it also is a more fiscally responsible approach. So that's why we made that modification for 2020. You'll see the reduction of the $5 million going back to CP.
Quick question. This page is the other category, is it?
That is correct. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes. Additionally, you know, we talked about revenue earlier. You know, we shared with you the capacity credits would be being reduced over time, and there's a negotiation going on with FMPA about getting those numbers finalized. So the debt pay down that you see will kind of coincide with the reduction of those capacity credits. So at the end of that life term, that debt will be paid off at about the same time that we anticipate those capacity credits going away. So we've allowed for that in this budget, and so we think that the coincidental timing is good, because that takes that debt strain off over about that same horizon of time that we'll have those capacity credits. And they'll hopefully end about the same time. So recurring minor capital projects and moderate capital projects combined, as Brian mentioned, for a total capital expenditure of about $26 million in this fiscal budget 20-year of $26 million. So the total expenses, as I told you, predictably, also have to tie to total revenues. So we have a FY20 budget of $222 million for total expenditures and other uses. Wanted to give you just a little highlight here. We share this with you every year so that you can kind of see. This is part of our within the community, the City of Kissimmee transfer that is $17.7 million we anticipate in the 2020 budget. Also, the $1.7 million of that is the city share of the county tax of 8%, or 25% of the 8%. That's the county, and additionally, the city has an 8% tax on that, and we anticipate that to be about $5.3 million. And then moving into the county side, you can see that progressively these are based on sales. And so as those increase, so does that utility tax transfer. And so that is a projected county tax of about $5.2 million going to the county. And the flow of funds, showed you this last time, but just to give you an idea, we talked about the revenues and expenses coming in, fuel related. And then you take those two components out and you have revenue for non-fuel and expenses for non-fuel. And this was kind of to give you an overview of how we plan to fund things moving forward for the next 5 years. We have positive net cash available based on that estimate. And then our capital projects over the time period that you see, capital projects net of contributed capital, it's the $26 million different than 21 because of the developer contributions for that and the offsets from FMPA and other sources. So you combine that with a debt repayment, take out capital, take out debt, and then you have an annual surplus or shortage, and then we will return that to the rate stabilization so that we can achieve what we consider to be a strong balance by the end of the horizon of about $43 million. So, but an average over that lifespan of anywhere from $20 to $40 million. So that gives us strong reserves. It provides us liquidity. It doesn't increase rates, and it doesn't add burden to our customers. And so we think that's good news. On the O&M breakdown, shared with you earlier. So on the O&M side is $161 million. Biggest piece of that, fuel and purchase power of $123. The departmental O&M is $38 million. And if you break that down a little bit further, as you move to the right on this graph, the salaries and benefits are about $37 million, with a small portion of that to non-labor of $1 million. And that is the component that we're going to discuss with the next vice president who moves up. But I will be happy to answer any questions that you have with respect to our budget overview.
Any questions?
Thank you, Kevin.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Thank you. Brian? This is your company human resources overview. Our corporate organizational structure remains unchanged for this budget review cycle. However, as Kevin and Brian both have indicated, structure will be changed based on the most recent organizational structure changes, and that it will be reflected in future budget documents.
The boxes here at the bottom of the screen are the major departments reporting into the general manager, and they contain the current manpower for each of the departments. Staff does not have any recommendations for changes in manpower this budget review, and so as such, we will be staying with your previously approved 289 full-time equivalent positions that you've already authorized us to have. One point of note that I want to make was that we are the management team, hats off to the management, as well as all of our employees for maximizing efficiency. In 2005, we had 288 full-time equivalent positions, and you can see our customer base was 56,000. We have increased 38% to 77,000 customers. Yet there's net value of only an increase of 289 full-time equivalency positions, with just only one difference in the positions from what we were delivering service on at 55,000 customers in 2005. So that is impressive work on behalf of our employee and management team. As I indicated at the budget directional meeting, I would be bringing you back information about the organizations that we conducted our salary surveys with, and this is the list of those organizations. And you can see here that the respondent data is indicating that pay increases, they are anticipating pay increases this year to be somewhere between 2% and 5%, and you can see the measurements there. However, and then TOHO was undetermined at this time, I would like to point out that they normally do what the city does or something close to what the city does. But nonetheless, that was the salary survey that we got from them this year. Now, having said that, with all things considered by staff, brings us to staff recommendation that the board approve a market level adjustment of 3% for fiscal year 2020 annual budget. And yes, ma'am, I
need a motion, right?
Well, yes, ma'am, I would need
a question before we, but I guess you can make a motion, then I can make a question.
Well, I move we finalize the 3% increase.
I second it.
My question is, did we not raise that last year?
Yes, ma'am, you did 4% last year.
I thought we kind of brought us up to where we would be level with the other utilities and with.
Yes, ma'am. And there was an account for us also looking at our sister governments. So the city was giving 5%, and TOHO resultingly gave 4.5%. So I think it was the desire of the body to try to kind of get close to that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Negative, like sign. Hearing none, it's approved.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wilbur. Department.
Larry.
Good evening again. As you've heard many times tonight, this reflects two departments that will now be one moving forward. I'll be presenting both sides of power supply and engineering operations, and the next time you see a budget, a new budget, next year it will be the operations department. And as you've also heard, one of our biggest things, this is where your electric bill sits, the $123 million. That's your fuel and demand. And usually anything under double digits I don't mention, but you'll see that's a reduction of 2%. And that's in the demand portion, FMPA, refinance. Demand is where your physical assets sit, like the power plants and things. And they took some of the money and refinanced in such a way to our favor, and it lowered the cost of our demand by 2%. So that brought that down. Also on here, anything that isn't green, this is a listing of everything that is paid for. The green gets reimbursed. And then if you see down at the bottom, our bill is basically the fuel and purchase power. We always come back and tell you if we've made a change on what we told you last time on capital. Last time we had $2 million in capital, which FMPA was going to pay for, to move the pipe, to attach a pipeline tap to the Sable Trail pipeline. Well, they've studied it. They said we have two pipelines connected now. They're having a little problem negotiating with Sable Trail, and they're saying now's not the time to do it, so they've just taken it out of the budget until further notice. Was there any questions on the power supply portion of the operations?
No, thank you.
Okay, here's engineering and operations side of it. And on engineering and operations side, you'll note that they're coming down professional and contractual services. We have 18% rise in that, and that's for an AMI. The AMI meters, you're thinking, well, what's that? What do I do on O&M? And so Brian and I think. But it's what it is. It's when we go put the meters in, we run into sometimes that the cans that they sit in aren't in the best condition. So we've had hired a contractor. So as we go through the year, we figure on our first look at this, probably about 3% of them we need repaired or replaced. So we've contracted a company to do that so we can keep moving forward. And that's your cost. That's about $250,000. That's the big driver on taking that one up. And then you have your 31% rise, and that's some needed O&M. The biggest driver on that is what they call load tap changers, and that's what changes different loads on your transformers, so you can automatically make the transformer put a little more or less on what you're doing to go with the voltage, and they're in time for repair or in some replace. So that's a big driver. They're a costly item. You're on major equipment there. And then also there's going to be another big driver. It's time for the Hansel plant to have an inspection, so we're having an inspection come in, and that has a cost. And you drop down and say, well, what's this, $199 to the good? We got reimbursements for the transmission line in Intercession City because Duke forced an upgrade on there, so we do it. They reimburse as we go. Well, that'll be done this year, so that's your difference in that. And then the other one, you say actually in the budget year, we get money back from FMPA because they're going to put some – we're putting batteries and battery chargers in, and they're part of it for reimbursements, 31. So that is it on the – that takes us down to our capital changes. And the we're saying there's a capital change from the last time we presented. And the reason for that – and you'll probably have this all every year – I actually did this in the dry run too. You actually see this every. My dry run was perfect.
Yeah,
I mean, right in line. So, what you'll notice on there now that it's there, you'll probably see this every year. We have a 5-year trending model that says this is what's going to cost us each year to do our line extensions, and to have the data to give you to what we feel accurate with is not available until this meeting. It's not available last meeting. So we just go with last year's 5-year trend, which has a dollar amount for 20, and then we say, okay, here's the update. All the information's in, and we think it's this. So that's why it came in a little lower and a little different number on there. But we're just bringing it to your attention. There's a change in that. And that should do it. Are there any other questions or any questions?
Well done, Larry. Thank you.
Thanks. This has both E&O and power supply there.
Hello, board. I'm nursing a cold, so hopefully my voice is not too cloudy. No changes since the last time you saw these numbers. We're just adding the O&M. Some cost that I'd like to just give a little definition to. In the personal services, obviously 6% is a little higher than some of the other departments are averaging. A lot of this is due to overtime. We have a lot of systems that we make jokes that we're elves. We have to come in at night to make the shoes and do it on weekends. It's money well spent, even though it is an increase in cost, because if I bring a tech in after hours to work on a system, that means that when everybody comes in the next day, it's ready to go. And as many as 100 people might have to wait if that system wasn't worked on in off hours. So we do a lot of that. It's just the nature of the beast in IT. So it's just as our systems grow, as our dependence on automation increases, we'll see that increase. We've also got more people working overtime, so that plays into it as well. In terms of our contractual services, you're seeing some larger numbers there. This is where the AMI cost is starting to show up in budgets. We knew this was coming, and IT is where we realize the cost of customer services systems, the CIS, the financial systems from finance, also from the GIS system from engineering is all housed in IT in terms of its cost. So you're seeing costs in my department, but they're actually for systems outside of IT, obviously, for the greater good. But we manage those and work with the vendors, so that's why we have the bills on our side. And then in the other operating expenses, the same thing. It's just more AMI expenses that are going to be there for the long haul because we host in the cloud on our AMI system. That saves us in the long run because we didn't have to bring in hardware, set it up, maintain it, to have backups. All of that is done by the vendor now at this time. We have the option for our contract to bring it in-house if we choose to do so at a future date, if we feel that we're maybe paying too much and we're at a disadvantage by not having it in-house. We can bring it in-house, but to start out, it was better to let them do it and kind of study what the real cost would be. And with that, everything else, again, coming down to the numbers you see there at the bottom of the screen. Any questions on IT? Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Okay, every year I kind of talk about the things that are impacting customer service that impact our budget. And as you all know, we have additional customers. Our payment arrangements are steady. The percentage of customers that get disconnect notices and are actually disconnected remain pretty steady. Net write-offs, as Kevin said, remain low. The AMI project impacts our service levels. The increased use of self-service with e-bill impacts customer service. We have over 38,000 customers on e-bill now, so we're very proud of that. And then we continue the increase in education on solar, also electric vehicles, energy conservation, rebates, things like that, and that all impacts our O&M budget. So here's our budget. The increases were due to market level adjustments and merit, health insurance, increases in rebate programs, and travel and training as we continue to be very committed to developing our employees as their positions are changing. The decreases were we transferred one full-time equivalent to E&O. Our commissions to collection agencies are down because we're collecting a lot more of the money before we send it to collection agencies. Our postage is down, as was mentioned before, and promotional activities. And this is one of our, I'll call it our off years, where we don't have to replace as many computers. We seem to have really heavy years. This is one of our lighter years. So the overall budget change is actually a reduction of 1% in O&M. And then you can see our capital expenditures. I show this to you every year. It just kind of shows that we have a lot of non-rate revenues that come into KUA, and a lot of these are driven by the activities of customer service employees and the responsibilities that we have, and they actually cover about 37% of the customer service O&M budget. And here, capital, there are no changes under budget year 2020, but the change that I would bring to your attention is, we mentioned it last time, we did move the AMI capital dollars into customer service, and that shows up in the rollover projects in the budget year, fiscal year 2019. So with that, any questions?
Thank you, Susan. Kevin, back.
So, Madam Chair, I'll be showing you three budgets this evening, finance and accounting, central services budget, and the general manager's budget as well. So moving into the finance and accounting budget, fairly straightforward. We had the movement because of the reorg of one person out of the department, and so a market level adjustment increase on the personal services line, but then the fringe and were associated with the movement of the person out of the department caused a reduction in fringe benefits. As professional and contractual services, those were banking fees for AmScot that we had anticipated an increase that did not readily materialize. We were able to reduce that budget. Additionally, with some banking fees that we were able to reduce the budget for that. And so that's the consequent decrease that you see on that line. And for a net departmental expenditure increase of 0%. So as you would expect, accounting should be able to do, right? So... Central services, I'll move into that one. This increase is not an actual increase. This represents, again, the transfer of a budget from two individuals from two different departments into this particular department. And then you see the associated fringe with those positions as well with the increase there. Other operating expenses include things like for facilities repair, ongoing facilities repair and maintenance, waste disposal, and projected a slight increase because of the routine pavement coating. and so of the asphalt, which happens periodically. And then materials and supplies, you'll see that those were basically related to some computer equipment and the centralization of water services within the Central Services Group. They're taking over that to achieve an economies of scale and manage that for the utility. So that budget was also transferred into that department for an increase, 16% for that. But again, that budget didn't exist last year, so it's not an actual increase, just a transfer of personnel into that budget. And so capital changes there, as we said earlier, we show you changes from what you've seen previously. There was a wheel alignment system budgeted for $29,000 that has been removed from the budget. The decision was made that we could probably go an additional length of time without having to purchase that right away. So that delay was included in this budget. In the general manager's office, you can see the personal services reduction there. That is largely associated with the movement of one of the personnel from that office into the central services budget that I showed you previously, as well as the salary for the new general manager and the associated fringe of that as well. Professional and contractual services shows a small increase because of strategic planning utilization expenses for that. I believe that's related to Kathy V's when she comes and chairs with us during the budget process. And then the materials and supplies increase there is related to the Florida Municipal Broadband Alliance membership that is around $7,500, and additionally for some computer equipment of around $3,000 in there. So that represents the increase there, but a net departmental decrease overall of 11%. And I share this with you. Again, this is what we anticipate for budget 2020 for the Board of Directors travel and training. You can see the educational opportunities there broken out. We do anticipate a participation factor of 100% with our board, and we recognize the fact that our board is engaged, and we're appreciative of that, and so we allow for that in the budget and put that in there so that you can utilize that for travel and training. And I'm happy to answer any questions about that if you have any. Additionally, this was something that we were asked to include for your review. You can see that historically, travel and training and where it is projected to be at to be over the horizon and then for 2020. And as I stated earlier, our board is engaged in training, and that's a great benefit to us and to our ratepayers. And so this gives you an idea of how that has progressed over time, where we're at in the green bar expenditures current year to date, and the dotted line showing you where we anticipate to be for the balance of this year and then what the 2020 budget will be as well. Happy to answer any questions about those budgets if you have any.
Any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Dr. Hill.
Dr. Hill?
Okay, this is the human resources overview there for our department. And as you can see here, the personal services and the fringe benefits at 5% and 1% respectively are really just routine applications that were made across the company. The 9% increase was associated with hepatitis B vaccines just relating to CPR certifications for those employees that we do CPR training with. And also an increase for more advanced training for employees across the company. Also, the 6% was mainly relating to tuitions reimbursement increases. You see the 153 different percent differential there for capital expenses, but it was the reason behind that is because we elected not to proceed with a previous budget item for a medical leave online tracking system. After we reviewed that in greater detail, we figured it wasn't really our bang for our buck, and so we weren't going to spend money on a program that did not meet our performance expectations. So we backed off on that, and that caused that. But the overall increase is 7% for the department. And now, Chris.
Oh, good afternoon. Our overall budget for 2020 is up 8%, driven primarily by three things: the increase in community sponsorships, a new website that we will be launching, as well as archiving of social media for public records purposes.
That was good.
Have a chance to blink. All right, I guess we're at Hear the Attorney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have good news from Tallahassee. The governor signed into law both the bill that protects from disclosure customer consumption information that's less than one billing cycle. That's very important since we're deploying AMI this year. The timing couldn't be better. That's really going to help our customers. And also the cybersecurity bill, which the board can discuss cybersecurity matters without that being in the sunshine. And outside of that, nothing else.
Okay. General Manager.
Madam Chair, I just want to point out that we've published our 2019 hurricane handbook. There should be a copy for each board member, but if you didn't get one, please let me know. Also wanted to, you probably already know, but we set a new system peak a few days back of 380 megawatts. Eclipsing the previous one in August of 18 of 374, so it's going to be a hot summer, y'all. So, outside of that, the only other thing I want to our own Chris Gent was recognized by the Florida Public Relations Committee. He received their highest honor that can be bestowed upon someone, the John W. Dillon Award. He received that last week, and so we're proud of him.
Addition to your house to hold all the awards you're getting.
And then just finally, I look forward to spending time with the board at our National Trade Association National Conference. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to directors. Well, first of all, Mayor, do you have something?
I just wanted to say the board this year, with our legislative priorities for the city of Kissimmee, we were very lucky. One of our legislative priority was to help the smaller restaurants in our downtown Kissimmee to change the restrictions to get a liquor license. Actually, myself and the mayor of St. Cloud, we both went to Tallahassee and to our representatives to get this bill passed. Downtown St. Cloud and downtown Kissimmee got that bill passed. The governor signed it. Also, the other one that is also very important to us in the city of Kissimmee, the Senate president approved $965,000, which was the funding that was needed to start construction for the new police training facility in Kissimmee, which will be in the name of our two officers that we lost back in 2017. Not only is the facility going to be named after them, but the road that will be put in there will be named after them. Thanks to the Senate president, he actually took this funding out of his own pot of money because it wasn't in the books to get passed. Our lobbying team, Gray Robinson, did a tremendous job to help us get that. That Saturday that they were doing budgets, which it was the final Saturday in Tallahassee, I was moving and I had the phone in my ear with them telling me what was going on and me speaking through the phone to try to get the funding. And it was passed. Speaker of the House went ahead and joined with the Senate president. So you guys will probably get an invitation when we get ready to do the groundbreaking of the facility. We expect to have the Senate president there and hopefully the governor, because once it passed, we were holding our breath that the governor was not going to pass it. We went and told them who it was for, and the governor didn't even think about it twice. He just went ahead and signed it and did it. Today I had a meeting with the president of KUA. We had a great meeting. I've looked at this book and some of the time that I have available, and it has a great budget. Did not agree too much with the with what the percentage that we're giving our KUA employees. We need to move forward. But then I got a little bit more confused today, board members, because when we got to the item G3 and we got the customer satisfaction survey, and I saw the percentage compare KUA to the state, and to the nation. And the high percentage rate that we have, this wasn't done by itself. This was done by the employees of KUA. And personally, I believe that 3%, it's a mistake on our side to do that.
It's already been done.
But I have the right to speak on that.
I guess you do.
Yeah, this was, excuse me, I'm speaking. I'm the mayor of the city and I'm talking right now.
Okay.
I am very disappointed. If I would have seen this report, I would have said, we gave them 3% this year. After I saw this report, it's very disappointing. The mayor of the city is very disappointed with the decision that was made of giving these employees 1% less than what they got last year. That's all I had to say.
Okay, Director Hemphill. Kathleen?
I don't know. I don't want to argue about increases, but I believe that that's not taking anything away from the employees, the fact that we gave them 3%. I'm one of the ones that approved the 3% or agree with the 3%, because they're still hungry. There is hunger in our state. There is hunger in our city. I see a lot of people in need every single day. And I think that there is a big difference between what employees of KUA make and what the rest of the employees in the city make. And there is disparity. There's discrepancy, and I think we need to kind of level ourselves so that it doesn't look bad. And I'm sorry, employees of KUA, if you feel that 3% was not enough for you. We appreciate the work that you do. We appreciate every single good comment and good rating that you get on the surveys. And we love you, and we appreciate you. But 3% is all that KUA can afford at this time to give us increases for salary.
Thank you for doing that. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Manny, do you have something?
Book, Chris, you were behind the hurricane handbook, right? Excellent. The budget book. Excellent. I actually read through it, and it's getting scary. I'm starting to understand you guys. So be careful in the future. Thank you. Great job.
Yeah, I want to thank everybody for the meeting today. It's always hard when you go through the budget meeting. It's long, and I didn't find any of us going to sleep here, so y'all did a really good job of keeping us awake. And listening, and thank you for that. And with that, the meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
Real quick.